Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. It is now or never. That debt is fraud. Please remember, pray, learn, pray, and act as we make our appeals to heavens. Get informed so we can actually act properly and pray upon those things we've learned to make sure that they're just, you know, they're kosher, right? Anyway, and no, I'm not Jewish, nor am I anti-Semitic. Anywho, welcome back, Tammy. And the campaign, again, your campaign begins after the election. That's when you want to initiate a public relations campaign. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't need a bunch of advertising or anything else. You're going to go out and prove to the people what scoundrels you have in office. It doesn't mean that you're running for office, but guess what happens after 2 years of you complaining and proving how these people are not doing what they're supposed to do? Who becomes the logical choice to fill their position? The person complaining. So anyway, and that's kind of a prevailing thought. You know, the whoever complains gets to take it over, right? Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, we need to help everybody understand that we need to be enforcing the limited roles or those things that our public servants do if what they do is not supporting the Constitution, then they have no business being in office. That is their number one. They are legally bound by the supreme law of the land to do that one thing. Along with the things that we also have them do, they are required to do that one thing. In other words, folks, why is it that we do not have one state in emergency session right now dealing with the constitutional crisis? Why do we not have counties across the nation in special sessions demanding compliance of the Constitution?
Because, yeah, good question.
Because we keep swallowing these things that they have no authority to do. So yesterday, we went down a rat hole, and it all came really from this concept of limited powers. When the federal government was framed, there was no powers granted to them regarding religion, regarding speech, regarding the press, regarding, the rights of the people. If it wasn't listed, they couldn't do it. When we created the Bill of Rights, it created a change in the paradigm, thinking that that was powers these powers of them to keep from doing certain things. But it created a hole because Roe v. Wade became a federal issue because they thought that, oh, well, does this person have a right of privacy? And is the privacy? And then they went in and redefined it. When it comes to a case regarding a Bill of Rights, has a state violated your right from keeping you from being able to religiously worship based on your conscience, to go to church? Did they deny you your ability to go to work and your ability to engage in commerce? These fundamental rights that no state can make any law or enforce law, abridging your privileges and immunities guaranteed by the Constitution. So the Bill of Rights really didn't come to even be important until the 14th Amendment and the Civil War. There was hardly any issues whatsoever that were being brought to the federal government or complaints coming from the states that the federal government was, trampling on our Bill of Rights. Actually, the problems of the rights of the people being trampled upon had been coming from the states, and they were always the problem. And so when Madison was moved to create the Bill of Rights, I believe that was the divine hand of providence that knew that now was the time to create them so that they would be galvanized in such a way that it would constrain all governments from doing things that they shouldn't have done. The problem is the courts in between the ratification and the Bill of Rights and before the Civil War, the courts started getting out. The genie got out of the bottle when it comes to the courts. The same thing with corporations, same thing with executives, blah, blah, blah. I mean, all these genies and all these bottles started getting out and started taking more and more authority. And next thing you know, the parties are ruling us. The corporations are ruling us, the bureaucracies, everybody but our representatives. So the bottom line is that by the time the Civil War came along, the Bill of Rights became paramount to protecting every person from state tyranny. The problem was that the courts, by this point in time, already became accustomed to redefining what the original language was for the due process, was for the equal protection under the law, and so forth and so on. And they literally took and completely, excuse the expression, bastardized. They completely made an aberration, an abomination in redefining what those laws were to do, which this is how the Taney court with the Plessy v. Ferguson, I think it was Taney, whoever it was, Plessy v. Ferguson, started allowing racial segregation and oppression. And it became the rule of the law. Jim Crow laws actually became acceptable. They were all unconstitutional, but they became an accepted thing. And this is how we went down this path. And this, by going down this path of all these unconstitutional things occurring, and this is how we do things now. We weren't following the Constitution for so long that became the problem. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I mean, if this is how we've been doing it, who are you to challenge the process of how we do these things? Where do you get off? And the reality is, I get off on the Constitution, and you have to follow that. And if you don't get off on it, then you're going to get off of this position. We'll replace you. That's what it's all about. Okay, so anyway, we were just going through, and we covered one paragraph yesterday. And that's okay. It's because I think these discussions, when you have questions like that, I think it's merits the time to dive into it. Again, the hate and the visceral that I get, it's okay. This is America. I have a right to be offended, and just like the people have a right to not listen. The reality is I'm right on this, because we do not want to give government discretion. We want to make sure that we have as much as airtight control on what we expect them to do. Right? I mean, if you don't have these are the only things you can do. Then when you actually employ somebody like a butler, these are the things you can, you can drive the car to where we tell you to go. You can do this. You can do this. I mean, you lay out exactly what the responsibilities are, and that's it. So that when they actually take discretion and go, well, I had your shopping money, and because I had some left over, I decided to spend it on something else. Right. Nope. If you didn't give them that discretion, then you can hold them to those things. And chaining down the genie or keeping the bottle corked is critical, especially when it comes to these people that have the ability to kill you. When it comes to government, there is no entity, there's no institution on the face of the earth that is better at waging war and killing people than government. Most businesses and corporations find it antithetical to kill people because that's their customer. And when we think about it, why would it be good business to cause harm to anybody? Unless you're in league with government. This is why pharmaceuticals have gotten all this protection now, because they know what they're doing. They're hurting us. And government is protecting them where they don't have the authority to do so. The federal government doesn't have the authority to protect them.
Right.
Okay. There you go. And that's why understanding what is enumerated, what is granted, and what isn't becomes probably the most important lesson people start learning. Because once they understand, oh, well, you can't go there. You can't do that because that's not enumerated. Like education. And as a matter of fact, I had the conversation yesterday with a team member. And the individual was saying, you know, what about education? And I go, well, when you look at our petition for education, we have one, folks. It's not done, but we have one. When you look at it, it creates the case of building off of all of the previous petitions that create relevant arguments. One of those is the Department of Transportation, Petition 6. And Petition 6 basically spells out the fact that if it's not specified in the enumerations and is not a derived or a derivative of the enumerated object, in other words, is the ability to create roads, highways, waterways, improve them, and so forth, a derivative of the ability to establish a post road. Establishing a post road is basically the federal government telling the state where that post road will be. It'll be from this point to this point on this trail, you know, changing here. They'll even get into the latitudes and longitudes of every turn if necessary, so that you know precisely the travel of that post road. But they don't have the authority to build it, nor do they have the authority to build roads for commerce or for defense, natural, the defense and general welfare. When they came down to going to Monroe in 1822, Monroe's pretty old. So in 1822, when they came to Monroe and said, here are the six justifications for us to be able to do this. Monroe basically said, even if I add all of these together, that power is still not within those objects combined. It must exist on its own. It cannot be implied that because we need to do all of these things, we have to do that. It has to be a derivative of the object. In other words, they have this responsibility of creating highways and waterways and airways. They have the responsibility of all interstate and intrastate highways, roads, and so, but that's not delegated. So when we look at education, and she was going, well, why are you talking about this? I said, because if they can't build a road, highway, waterway, or even regulate them, then where do they get off with something that isn't even enumerated? I mean, at least they had these six things in the Constitution within the enumerated objects that they were kind of tying together to say, we think out of these six objects, it justifies our need to do these things. And Monroe said, no, sorry, that power doesn't exist within all of those combined. Therefore, we must amend the Constitution. So when we get to the Department of Education, we've already proven that they just don't have that authority. And we don't need to repeat that. It's not an enumeration. So anyway, in some ways, each of these petitions are big history lessons of, you know, the atrocities of the federal government. But for the most part, these petitions do not create the end of the Department of Transportation. These petitions force our Republican form of government to start doing what they're supposed to do by actually dismantling and basically decommissioning and then dismantling these things that are unconstitutional because they have to do it. If Trump dismantles the Department of Education, guess what happens?
The states take over.
No, well, maybe at that point in time, but the next president can come back and say, we're going to do it. You know, that guy was a wacko. Until the states stand up and say, you have no authority, we never gave you the authority, therefore you can't do it, and we actually want you to tell the whole world that you've been defrauding them and the American people by exercising authority not granted. By actually forcing Congress to come out and say we had no authority, it has been disclosed to us that even though this was done on another watch, in another time, in another generation, we realize that we don't have the authority now that we've been challenging, because at that point in time, Congress could literally, if they actually didn't. So when you look at Republic Review is, you know, like death by paper cuts if you're a federal government person, because they're going to get cut till they dead. They bleed out. However, when they actually start recognizing what exactly what the states are doing, they can actually stand up and say, well, if we realize that all of these things that we're doing, we have no authority to do, we can take those same, you know, and actually do the same thing. And they could actually save the states the energy and the time. I think that what will end up happening, because this is how it'll go. It's like the petitions. Let's start off with the petition. You go into your county with a petition on the immigration, and they look at this. They see the constitutional argument. They can't refute it. And they go, well, what do you want us to do? We want you to create this committee and to do this and to do this, these 8 steps. This is what we want you to do, because one of those steps is to actually put, you know, endorse the petition out to the other counties. Another step is to endorse this petition out to the state so that the state legislature knows you're standing behind this petition. You're going to hold them accountable. So there's these 8 steps. And then you give them another petition. They go, well, what do you want us to do? We want you to do the exact same thing. And since you've already done the committee and we're already going down this path of doing this, this, and this, then all you need to do is actually send this as an endorsed petition out to the other counties and send this as an endorsed petition up to the state and say, you know, we're watching you. You better start getting on the ball here. And then the next petition. So after you've hit the, you know, county commissioners with 5 petitions, maybe the second or third petition, they're going to look up over their glasses or over the paper, right? They're holding the paper and they're now looking up and going, okay, how many more of these do you have? And that's when we pull out the table of tyranny and say, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? There's that many atrocities and problems? And then you go, that is why your county constitutional assembly, your constitutional review assembly or committee, whatever they call it, this constitutional compliance committee, whatever they call it, that's why they are doing the audit that they need to do so that they can find all of these things and prove how they are all unconstitutional. And how we're being robbed and how we're being defrauded and that we don't owe that money, that we want all our money back. Imagine that. Now they start getting the picture and going, okay, whatever you guys tell us, we're behind it because this is all about compliance. That's what you hope. That's what we would hope to obtain. But sometimes we have to get rid of people to get the right champions in there so that we now have the Madisons and Jeffersons and the Rufus Kings and the good guys in office that actually will lead the way to a full restoration of our hybrid constitutional republic and reclaim our liberties. That makes sense, right? Boy, can I marginalize something or what, huh? So now back to Mason. So Mason basically talked about how the representatives, because getting back to the paragraph, and I'll read it this time, Colonel Mason agreed with Mr. Governor Morris that we ought to leave the interest of the people to the representatives of the people. But the objection was that the legislature would cease to be the representatives of the people. Now, I don't know how he meant that other than the Congress representatives. It would continue so no longer than the states now containing a majority of the people should retain that majority. As soon as the southern and western population should predominate, which must happen in a few years, the power would be in the hands of the minority and would never be yielded to the majority unless provided for by the Constitution. This is all about equal footing, because they would actually say, hey, eventually the Western states would actually have the majority of the population. And at that point in time, when they do, they won't have the representation and that voice in this government. And so at this point in time, they're going to either have to yield to a minority to rule them, or they will have to revolt. That's the whole point he's bringing up. This goes back to the argument for equal footing, where every state joins and has equal footing for its representation. Mm-hmm. So then they go down this path of, on the question for postponing Mr. Williamson's motion, in order to consider that of Mr. Rutledge, you have to keep track of all these little things. It goes on. So then Mr. King basically comes up after they've gone through these different motions. Mr. King comes up, and you can go ahead and pick it up from there.
Okay, Mr. King, being much opposed to fixing numbers as the rule of representation was particularly so on account of the blacks. He thought the admission of them along with whites at all would excite great discontents among the states having no slaves. He had never said as to any particular point that he would in no event acquiesce in and support it. But he would say that if in any case such a declaration was to be made by him, it would be in this. He remarked that in the temporary allotment of representatives made by the committee, the southern states had received more than the number of their white and three-fifths of their black inhabitants entitled to them.
Okay, so he's now pointing out the disparity between the states that actually have this bump in population, and the problem is that they're not population. And Mr. King, you know what state he's from? He's from Massachusetts, right? I believe. Is it Massachusetts or is it, help me out here. Do you remember where Mr. King, is he from? Pennsylvania? I think he's a northern state. I will look it up. And so as I do look it up, why don't we kind of look at the representation point as far as, let me see here, debates, the delegates, you know what? I actually have to pull it out of the references. So, sorry, folks. I thought I'd have all of these things. And every once in a while, I ask myself, well, what about? So, Mr. King, Rufus King, Massachusetts. I was right. You don't want to confirm these things, right? Because I could be wrong. When you get gray hair, you start doubting yourself. And plus, I don't like to... I already get enough criticism that I'm overly confident and arrogant and what have you. But anyhow, I was right. See, I do have a sense of humor. Anyway, so Mr. King was basically pointing out that this was going to become a very disparate problem, as hopefully slavery would be capped. And as a matter of fact, the Northwest Ordinance would have actually contained slavery that it wouldn't have been able to propagate, right? But the Northwest Ordinance mm-hmm. got superseded by the Constitution, where slavery started propagating. And so they were looking at it. Rufus King was looking at it to say, you know what? If they get to actually get representation to defend their reprehensible institution, slavery, then it, you know, we're not going to be able to get rid of it. I think the real point he was trying to drive was that we couldn't allow representation for blacks. And this concept of three-fifths of them, you know, was maybe this compromise that they needed to take. So Mr. Sherman then said what?
Mr. Sherman, South Carolina had not more beyond her proportion than New York and New Hampshire, nor either of them more than was necessary in order to avoid fractions or reducing them below their proportion. Georgia had more, but the rapid growth of the state seemed to justify it. In general, the allotment might not be just, but considering all circumstances, he was satisfied with it.
Okay, so with that, we got a break. And so... at this point, they're still kind of meddling with how to lay out the distribution and this concept of three-fifths. Now, to be clear, we're not even at the point, because they still were trying to get rid of slavery and not even allow the three-fifths. They didn't cross that bridge until the 22nd of August, and we're still in July, mid-July. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so again, this is all really, really interplay between the slavery issue and states being admitted into the union. And so, and it's all about property as well, land, property. These are the fundamental things that these men had to go through to finally lay out what the federal government, you know, and how representation was going to be apportioned. Okay, so now Mr. Gorham from Massachusetts steps up. And isn't it nice I actually put Massachusetts there so I know I'm right?
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Mr. Gorham supported the propriety of establishing numbers as the rule. He said that in Massachusetts, estimates had been taken in the different towns and that persons had been curious enough to compare these estimates with the respective numbers of people. And it had been found, even including Boston, that the most exact proportion prevailed between numbers and property. He was aware that there might be some weight in what had fallen from his colleague as to the umbrage which might be taken by the people of the eastern states, but he recollected that when the proposition of Congress for changing the 8th Article of Confederation was before the legislature of Massachusetts, the only difficulty then was to satisfy them that the Negroes ought not to have been counted equally with whites instead of being counted in the ratio of 3/5 only.
Okay. All right. So they're just wanting to make it this point that they want to make sure, and the 3/5 is one way to do that, that they wouldn't be equally counted. The bottom line is the South was trying to get its bread buttered on all sides. They, in one hand, they refer to the slaves as property, and in the other hand, they're people that should have representation. This was a diametrically opposing concept that they were creating. It was a paradox. They can't be property and people.
Right.
Okay. So again, this was a huge problem. And as a matter of fact, W. Cleon Skousen, in his book, The 5,000-Year Leap, really makes a point. You know, the institution of slavery had been around for 5,000 years. And that we were finally at a point where much of us in America had finally realized that we needed to get rid of this. And yet we had three states that weren't going to get rid of it. And they held out and they held out and they held out and they held out. And bottom line, the political correctness forced the slavery issue. Now, I think that when you really look at all of the table, all the pieces on the table, the small states had a big issue too. They wanted to maintain their sovereignty and have equal representation. So there was, you know, this need to placate just to make sure everybody got what they wanted. And the way it laid out regarding slavery, when we get into the ratification debates, we're going to actually disclose how the northern states, Massachusetts was one, Pennsylvania was another, in their debates, they actually disclosed the fact that numerically, over time, slavery would be eradicated because of that three-fifths rule and because of the practice of slavery. We'll get into that when we get to the ratification debates. So, okay, next up, Mr. Wilson from Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Mr. Wilson did not well see on what principle the admission of blacks in the proportion of three-fifths could be explained. Are they admitted as citizens? Then why are they not admitted on an equality with white citizens? Are they admitted as property? Then why is not other property admitted into the computation? These were difficulties, however, which he thought must be overruled by the necessity of compromise. He had some apprehensions also from the tendency of the blending of the blacks with the whites to give disgust to the people of Pennsylvania, as had been intimated by his colleague, Mr. Governor Morse. But he differed from him in thinking numbers of inhabitants, so incorrect a measure of wealth. He had seen the western settlements of Pennsylvania, and on a comparison of them with the city of Philadelphia, could discover little other difference than that property was more unequally divided among individuals here than there. Taking the same number in the aggregate in the two situations, he believed there would be little difference in their wealth and ability to contribute to the public wants.
Okay, so he believed, you know, obviously that they couldn't be placated. The bottom line, it was going to create these problems. From this down the road, I think people really started recognizing that as the institution, because it didn't take long. I mean, when you really back up and you look at slavery working in an agrarian society requires lots of land. And what ends up happening is the people that are working that land become more numerous, and the people that have to guard the slaves will always be at a critical mass. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm,
in other words, you can't afford to have more slaves than you can to guard them and to control them.
Right.
So there was this big problem that this comes up several times as we deal with this. But the reality is that they start recognizing, and we've already covered this already, that this North basically said, we're going to have to fight the wars for you because you're nothing but a liability. And they go, yeah, and you need our money because we have the money to pay for your wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, you know, Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, they have to share the same body. And so there was politics making strange bedfellows, so to speak. So let's go ahead and dive into Mr. Governor Morris now.
Mr. Governor Morris was compelled to declare himself reduced to the dilemma of doing injustice to the southern states or to human nature, and he must therefore do it to the former. He could never agree to give such encouragement to the slave trade as would be given by allowing them a representation for their Negroes. And he did not believe those states would ever confederate on terms that would deprive them of that trade.
Okay, so let's count the yays and nays, because I'm counting four yays and one, two, three, four, five nays. So It didn't carry. So then on the question census, the first year after meeting of the legislature, no, yay, yay, no, yay, 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 no. So they wanted to make sure then that they did it, you know, soon. They wanted to kind of go forward on filling the blank for the periodical census with 15 years. Everybody agreed, no problem. Non-com means no problem. Okay, so now Mr. Madison basically moved to add 15 years to the words that the legislature might anticipate when circumstances were likely. This all changed every 10 years, but were likely to render a particular year inconvenient. On this motion for adding, at least it passed the negative. In other words, there were more no's against it. They wanted to make sure it was being held. And so at that point, we kind of, okay, so they said, okay, we're going to have the census and we're going to be counting based on apportionment. And it looks like the 3/5 was still in question. They're still trying to figure out what that's going to be. So now we go down a little bit further from where Madison is. And if you notice, on Thursday, July 12th, after Mr. General Pickney, there's a little property. You see that property mark in the view or the navigation pane?
Yeah.
Okay. So Mr. Pickney basically is the one that starts talking about the desired wealth of, you know, land and property and so forth. So let's go ahead and pick it up at this point, because what we're trying to do, folks, is get you into the heats of the key issues as they were discussing very specific things, so that you could kind of see how it was brought up the next day, because it's like fat, right? Or it's like, you know, something you're chewing on that's really tough to chew. You know, you chew on it, you get tired, and you put it in, you know, put it aside, and you pick it up and chew on it some more. And I know that's disgusting for most people, but, you know, that's what you have to do to work out the problem. So I'm just using metaphorically chewing. Okay, go ahead, Miss.
General Pickney desired that the rule of wealth should be ascertained and not left to the pleasure of the legislature, and that property in slaves should not be exposed to danger under a government instituted for the protection of property. Good point. The first clause in the report of the first Grand Committee was postponed.
Okay. So, as they keep moving forward, Mr. Butler then seconded the motion in order that it might be committed. And so, anyway, Mr. Randolph was not satisfied with the motion, so let's go ahead and pick up what he says.
Mr. Randolph was not satisfied with the motion. The danger will be revived that the ingenuity of the legislature may evade or pervert the rule so as to perpetuate the power where it shall be lodged in the first instance. He proposed, in lieu of Mr. Ellsworth's motion, that in order to ascertain the alterations in representation that may be required from time to time by changes in the relative circumstances of the states, a census shall be taken within 2 years from the first meeting of the General Legislature of the U.S., and once within the term of every year afterwards, of all the inhabitants in the manner and according to the ratio recommended by Congress in their resolution of the 18th day of April 1783, rating the blacks at 3/5 of their number, and that the legislature of the U.S. shall arrange the representation accordingly. He urged strenuously that express security ought to be provided for including slaves in the ratio of representation. He lamented that such a species of property existed, but as it did exist, the holders of it would require this security. It was perceived that the design was entertained by some of excluding slaves altogether. The legislature, therefore, ought not to be left at liberty.
Okay. So, Mr. Ellsworth.
But Mr. Ellsworth withdraws his motion and seconds that of Mr. Randolph.
Okay. Now, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Wilson observed that less umbrage would perhaps be taken against an admission of the slaves into the rule of representation if it should be so expressed as to make them indirectly only an ingredient in the rule by saying that they should enter into a rule of taxation. And as representation was to be according to taxation, the end would be equally attained. He accordingly moved and was seconded so to alter the last clause adopted by the House, that together with the amendment proposed, the whole should read as follows, provided always that the representation ought to be proportioned according to direct taxation, and in order to ascertain the alterations in the direct taxation which may be required from time to time by the changes in the relative circumstances of the states. Resolve that a census be taken within 2 years from the first meeting of the legislature of the U.S. and once within the term of every year afterwards of all the inhabitants of the U.S. in the manner and according to the ratio recommended by Congress in their resolution of April 18, 1783, and that the legislature of the U.S. shall proportion the direct taxation accordingly.
Okay, So you see how they're massaging this and massaging this and massaging this and trying to get closer to an agreed upon point. Okay? And so, because now Mr. Wilson wants to make sure that there's a taxation tied to this, in addition to, you know, this allowance of apportionment. So now Mr. King of Massachusetts then speaks up. Now, let's just notice this. So Pinckney started it off with South Carolina trying to push down this motion. Connecticut, a northerner, started moving to make some changes to it. And then Mr. Butler basically seconded it that they might commit that. And then all of a sudden, Mr. Randolph said, well, let's chew this up a little bit more, and took it down another turn because he was anti-slavery and a northerner. Or because you got to look at Virginia as being committed to getting rid of slavery. The only three states that were trying to maintain it was the Carolinas and Georgia. Mr. Ellsworth then pipes on top of that, then Mr. Wilson of Pennsylvania. So now Mr. King of Massachusetts, and obviously I put it here, so I know I'm right. But anyway, so Mr. King states this.
Mr. King, although this amendment varies the aspect somewhat, he had still two powerful objections against tying down the legislature to the rule of numbers. One, they were at this time an uncertain index of the relative wealth of the states. Two, if they were just index at this time, it cannot be supposed always to continue so. He was far from wishing to retain any unjust advantage whatever in one part of the republic. If justice was not the basis of the connection, it could not be of long duration. He must be short-sighted indeed who does not foresee that whenever the South states, Southern states shall be more numerous than the Northern, they can and will hold a language that will awe them into justice. If they threaten to separate, now in case injury shall be done them, will their threats be less urgent or effectual, when force shall back their demands. Even in the intervening period, there will no point of time at which they will not be able to say, do us justice or we will separate. We urge the necessity of placing confidence to a certain degree in every government and did not conceive that the proposed confidence as to the periodical readjustment of the representation exceeded that degree.
You see what he just pointed out? Mr. King was pointing out the fact that whether we go this way or go that way, ultimately and eventually, they're going to come to a point where either they, you know, they try to use force upon us or they try to separate. Ultimately, they're going to try to separate. In other words, there's this thing that they're holding over our heads called slavery, and they're saying, you have to abide by this. We don't care how you, whether you like it or not, you're going to have to placate us. And he says, you give in to the demands, and it will always be, you know, quickly put over our head. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So he's being very astute. He's being, you know, calling it for what it is and saying, hey, you know, and what do they ultimately end up doing? They end up breaking the union. Because the northern states got carried away with... Well, so this what ends up happening is it proves the point that the Constitution was on created a path forward to eradicate slavery. And the fact came out that when the Southern states realized that they would end up losing their institution unless drastic measures were taken, where they were able to get the federal government to inflict slavery upon certain states, if not all states. And that's when the Missouri Compromise was concocted in 1820. Because, I mean, how far down the road? 1808 was when Madison vigorously shut down the slave trade as much as he possibly could. It was continued under Monroe. And as they started basically shipping the black freemen over to Libya to actually have an opportunity to be on their own soil and away from threat of being captured and brought into captivity and slavery again. So they, you know, they were depopulating the slave population. By 1820, what ended up happening was the Missouri Compromise, so that the South would be able to protect its institution of slavery for even a longer period of time, which then just required more and more, you know, I'll just say a tit for tat type of thing, where they were going back and forth. And ultimately, the northern states started using economic sanctions to hurt the southern states, which was all unconstitutional, which gave the southern states their out in seceding from the Union, which is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as you can't secede from a compact. If the compact is being violated, then you can secede from it. You can back out of it, as long as it's been proven both willful and material. Madison says that so many times. And so now Mr. Pinckney basically does this.
Mr. Pinckney moved to amend Mr. Randolph's motion so as to make blacks equal to the whites in the ratio of representation. This, he urged, was nothing more than justice. The blacks are the laborers, the peasants of the southern states. They are as productive of pecuniary resources as those of the northern states. They add equally to the wealth of considering money as the sinew of war to the strength of the nation. It will also be politic.
Mm-hmm.
It will also be politic with regard to the northern states, as taxation is to keep peace with representation. Keep pace. Yeah.
Right. So, okay. And so he wanted to make sure that the blacks would be equal to whites in the ratio of representation. Again, they, if you notice, they went all these northern comments. Yeah, we like that. We let's make sure that we diminish. We reduce the representation for the slaves, and then as soon as the first Southerner stands up, Mr. Pinckney, they want to make sure that the blacks will be equal to the whites in the ratio of representation. Boom. Now, Colonel Pinckney, or General Pinckney, actually, I think Mr. Pinckney and General Pinckney there were actually two Pinckneys there, moves to insert 6 years instead of two as the period computing from the first meeting of the legislature within which the first census would be. So they went through all of these different votes and so forth. And let me see here. Looks like A, no, A. So the A's carried. And then the next one, on a question for filling the blanks for the year periodical census with 20 years, that was basically negated. And then on the next one, the question for 10 years, it passed. So they all agreed to have a census every 10 years. See, all of these things were starting to pan out, because that's when we have a census every 10 years now. And then Mr. Pinckney's motion for rating blacks as equal to whites, how did it go?
It's three-fifths. Let's see. No.
7-2. So the South still didn't get, and as a matter of fact, if you notice, North Carolina voted no. In other words, North Carolina was kind of willing to give it up, but solidarity started becoming more and more evident that they needed to get South and North and South and those three states together. So anyway, Mr. Randolph's proposition, as varied by Mr. Wilson, being read for question on the whole. Now, this is Mr. Gary of Massachusetts. Go ahead.
Mr. Gary urged that the principle of it could not be carried into execution, as the states were not to be taxed as states. With regards to taxes and imports, he conceived they would be more productive where there were no slaves than where there were, the consumption being greater.
Uh-huh. Okay. So do you understand what he was saying there?
No, I was just trying to pay attention to reading at that point. No.
Okay. So the principle being carried into execution of the states were not to be taxed. I'm just going to reread it. Were not to be taxed as states. With regard to taxes and imports, he conceived that it'd be more productive where there were no slaves than there were slaves, for the consumption would be greater where there is no slaves. In other words, the importation of goods would be greater on those states that don't have slaves, because they don't have this free labor to producing. So they're going to consume more, because if you really look at the advantage the South had, they grew their own food, they made their own furniture, they did most everything for themselves, most everything. Because when you actually, George Washington had a complete enterprise. Jefferson was kind of there. I mean, they made their own nails. They actually had their own foundry, where they would make their own nails, they would, you know, have their own mill where they create their own boards. They did everything self-contained on these large plantations so that they didn't have to go buy things. It was cheaper to make them. If you made everything yourself and you were good at it, it would be cheaper than you having to buy and pay somebody else for their labor, in theory. Right? As long as you can do it equally fast with the same materials at the same cost, those types of things. But back in those days, it was very industrious to be self-sufficient. And so the southern states were far more self-sufficient because they didn't need some manufactured goods like creating nails and those types of pieces of hardware, tools, and so forth. So when we look at the northern states, they were manufacturing, but they didn't grow enough food for themselves. So they were more dependent and consuming certain products more and more. So, okay, so Mr. Ellsworth makes a point, and then we will go to the next part. And actually, this we'll wrap it up on this. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Ellsworth, in case of a poll tax, there would be no difficulty. But there would probably, that this doesn't make sense. This reading, but it says.
Yep, but the read would probably be none. Yeah, I know. Okay.
The sum allotted to a state may be levied without difficulty according to the plan used by the state in raising its own supplies. On the question, on the whole proposition, as proportioning representation to the direct taxation and both to the white and 3/5 of black inhabitants, and requiring a census within 6 years. And within every 10 years afterwards.
Okay, so for the most part, it carried with only two no's. There you go. Massachusetts was divided, and then there was two no's out of the, 11? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10. So 7 to 3. Anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to start off next, folks, so you can go ahead and just kind of scroll down to Friday the 13th. Yep, bad luck Friday. And we're going to just jump down to where Mr. Gary is, where we talk about the admission of new states. So that's what we'll pick up in our next session. We're here for you, folks. Thank you so much, Tammy, for joining us. And we're literally out of time. But all this being said, we can see this took a long time and a lot of chewing and a lot of effort in getting people to, you know, put everything on the table so that they could actually get these things resolved. When you really think about it, they did things that absolutely needed to be done so that we could move forward. And this is why this was not a runaway convention. They had to deal with everything. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.